Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, taking you deep into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking. Like I've mentioned on previous episodes, I've been struggling to bring in the support required for this year to keep the podcast going. Things are starting to look like they might improve from around March, April kind of time, but there's still a long way to go. And in the meantime, I could really do with your support. It really is the donations from you guys that are keeping me going right now. So a huge thank you to everyone that's donated. It's been amazing to see the response and to read all the messages of support that you've sent. If you found the podcast valuable to you and you want to help keep the podcast going, then you can donate over at downtimepodcast.com/shop. A financial donation isn't right for everyone, but don't worry, there's other ways you can help too. Like telling other riders about the podcast, sharing the episodes on your social media, and giving us a follow on Instagram or Facebook where we're at Downtime Podcast. The arrival of our first baby is very imminent now, so if I disappear for a week, then don't worry, I'll be back. I might just be a little bit tired. I want to say a massive thanks this week to Sprung Suspension. My forks and shocks desperately needed a full service, but I couldn't afford to get it done. The awesome guys at Sprung have properly helped me out. The service was great, with the bits arriving with them late on Tuesday afternoon and being back with me feeling amazing on Thursday. Impressive stuff. Check them out for all your UK-based suspension needs at sprungsuspension.com. Don't forget, you've only got a couple of days left to get 50% off your first month for the Strength Factory's awesome complete MTB online training program. I've been following it for a while now and it's certainly doing me a lot of good. Head to thestrengthfactory.uk, click on programs and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout, or you can use the link over in the show notes for this episode on downtimepodcast.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode, and join our newsletter to receive our weekly weekend warm-up email. That's not very easy to say. You can do all of that over at downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. This week, I'm joined by some of the biggest characters of the sport, Mikael and Stefan, aka Mayhem Media. These guys have been following the downhill circus for a number of years, taking awesome photos, consuming a few beers along the way, and generally taking a good times approach to watching World Cup racing. We sat down to find out more about where Mayhem Media came from, and believe me, these guys have got some great stories, including smuggling special supplies into hospital for the one and only Josh Briceland. These guys certainly know how to enjoy themselves, so without further ado, here's Mikael and Stefan. Mikael Gerard and Stefan Kolstad, aka Mayhem Media, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going with you guys?
Thank you.
It's going good.
Awesome, good stuff. Well, let's, before we get stuck into the episode, tell us a little bit about how you guys met and how you became friends, Stefan.
So we went to the same preschool, but back then we were not friends at all. We were actually in the opposite classes. And back then we were like rivals. I remember when we were on the soccer field, we always hated them. And I would say we always had the best team, so we always beat them. But if you ask Mikkel, he would say the opposite, you know, because we were like rivals. And if we had like snowball fights and stuff like this, it was always us against them. So that was back in preschool. And then we grew up, and after preschool, we went to the juniors school, it's called, I think. And then all the classes got mixed, because then we got three other schools from the area around, got communed into one larger school. And then we... all of us ended up in different classes, so we had to get friends with everyone. And then Mikkel came into a class with one of my best friends, and then of course then we started hanging out, and we started skiing together. That's when I really got to know Mikkel. From skiing, that was when we were I think we were 11, 12, 12 years old, and then we started to ski together, and that's how I think we got into sports and hanging out together. I think that's when we really became good friends. Before that, we didn't hang that much, and then from that on, we were just friends. And then I think after that, we went. Mikkel went a year to the U.S. United States for a year for like an exchange. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my high school, and my other friends went to other high schools. And Mikkel and I kind of went to our other separate ways, because he went to the States and I went to a different high school than all my other friends. So I think we both kind of had different schools. And then when Mikkel came home a year after, we found each other a little bit more, because all our other friends went to different high schools. So we like wanted to hang out together. And yeah, I think that's how we started to hang out more than we would have, because as I said, we were enemies back then, and and now we're best friends. And yeah,
nice. Mm. Mikko, how did bikes become part of this relationship, if it started with skiing?
Well, actually, we like back when, as Stefan said, when we were enemies, we rode bikes all the time. Like we were jumping around, and we live in a hilly area, and we loved to bike. So back when from where we hated each other to we started skiing together and became more friends, and until we actually got mopeds, we rode around all the time, just jumping curbs, just if you could see something fun, just do it. Like, we loved biking until we got mopeds, because in Scandinavia, everyone gets mopeds. And even back then, it was much bigger. So then the scooter and mopeds took over our lives. We quit biking, and we didn't even think about it until way later on. Like, when we saw bikers, we're like, oh, they're riding a bike. Yeah, like, there's probably like 1.5 billion people doing it in China right now. You know, it's like, we were like... We didn't have any interest in biking, but since we had been skiing together, we loved like the extreme part of the sports we can do, and we skied professionally. And Stefan was a better athlete than me, and I always follow him down when we ski, and just go full down all we can, you know. And then we had this 5-year period where we didn't do much, just partying, and like. Maybe more than 5 years too, probably like 6, 7, 8. And then we didn't do anything but just party and go to school. And when we quit school, you just work and party instead, you know? So when we were like 25 or 26, I think it was back in 2010, I went home to a really good friend of ours to hang out. And his little brother, he just bought a bike, obviously, because it was standing right in the hallway. And it was a Lapierre 720 downhill bike. Nice. And I had never seen a downhill bike before. And I didn't understand what the fuck I was looking at. And just the forks and the shock was the most like intruding thing I ever seen. It was so insane. It was just like I was staring at a motorbike, like a off-roader, but it was a fucking bike. So I was like, what the fuck? I was like, what the fuck is this? And his brother came and he's like, yeah, it's a downhill bike. And I'm like, what is that? And he's like, yeah, you go to the ski resort and ride the bike down and take the lift up again. And I'm like, does this exist? Like, is there anywhere you can do this shit around there? And he's like, yeah, Hafjell. And I'm like, why the fuck haven't anyone told me this before? So back then in 2010, like this was in the fall, because he bought the bike obviously on sale from a local bike shop called the Bikes and Boards. And that they had all the sickest bikes, and all the best riders back then were sponsored by Bikes and Boards, Bob. And it was like a mean machine. And I just went home and started Googling downhill biking. And I just came to realization that it actually was a sport, and you could do it like 2 hours from where we live. And that winter, I just started downloading all the mountain biking movies, just watching them, and decided to buy a bike the next spring. And I was watching all the mountain bike movies like every day, maybe four times, so just loving it before I even knew what it was. And I didn't know anything about it, so I had to like start reading Pink Bike from 5 years earlier to catch up, you know. So I quickly understood that Steve Pete and Sam Hill were like the biggest boys back then. And they were also starring a lot of bike movies together with Stevie Smith and Brooke McDonald and stuff too. And those names are just, and Rat Boy, of course. And those names just really caught my attention. And when I watched bike movies, I was like, holy fuck, this is so sick. And you kind of remember those riders and maybe remember them from their Facebook profile. And just that winter, I just watched tons of mountain bike movies and read a bunch of Pink Bike shit. And I knew I was going to start riding. So when the spring arrived in 2011, there was a demo, or there was a organized ride in Nesbyen, and there was a guy having a demo for bikes, and he lent me this brand new downhill bike, and I just stepped in there. Just, I was so confident. I was like, I've been watching all these movies all winter, and when I saw people jump, I was like, dude, you can jump longer than that, bro. And just like, fuck, you need to speed up, you know. You don't know what it's all about. You haven't never tried it, and last time you rode a bike was like 10 years ago. So I step up there and just go up to one of the people who have like demos there, and he gives me a brand new downhill bike worth like 5,000 quid, and he said, you break it, you buy it. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, bro. Like, how hard can this be? So we go to the shuttle up, and Nesbyen is kind of gnarly, but for sure it's gnarly if it's the first time you're riding a downhill bike. So everything was cool. I was just going to the trail, and we started, and I was with my brother's friend, and he had a bunch of other rider friends there too, and I didn't know any one of those guys, but I was like, they were all riding like downhill bikes. I was like, this is gonna be so sick. So we just strap on. I bought all this used gear on Finn.no, like a used place to buy shit, and like was ready to shred, and we just dropped in. And after maybe 50 meters, or maybe shorter than that, maybe 25 meters, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? And it was so crazy. And it was so steep, and so the turns are so sharp. So I was like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. And the people are coming behind me like, leper, leper, like, get out. And I'm like, holy fuck, 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 fuck. And my friends just disappear after like two corners. They're gone. And I'm like, by myself, just going down, and I knew I obviously had to get down. So I was like, "How hard can this be?" And when I came down, it was the most exhausting thing I've ever done. Like, I had to lie down on the grass, and my brain was like malfunctioned later that night. So I was like, "This was so for me." I was so stoked, but I also got that punch in my belly, like, don't you come here and think you can jump longer than Steve Pete, kind of, just because you watched his movies 40 times last winter, you know? So I was like, holy fuck, this is a way bigger challenge than I thought. And it kind of motivated me even more. And it was even more crazy. And I was like, this sport is the most crazy sport ever, and I never heard about it before now. And I'm like, I'm going all in. And then I bought a Iron Horse Sunday, which nice. Was kind of a ripoff. The guy from Kristiansand Cycle Club, I don't remember his name right now, but he had given me Saint brakes with Deora calipers. So the brakes were so weak, man. I almost crashed immediately. The brakes needed like four times the amount of stopping power that it actually had, you know? So I was like overshooting turns, just like like my, I was, my confidence was like about to burst, and I was like, fuck. So I was like straight on chain ration cycles and just got new Saint parts. And from there, you know, you like, you go into this, it's like having a sick car, but you don't pay 100,000 for a Ferrari, you know, you pay maybe like 1,000 for a used Iron Horse, and you can add all this sick shit to it, and it's endless. So for me, it was like, I got really obsessed in parts, obviously, in the beginning, and it was like this whole new world, and it was like my first hobby after skiing. So I was so stoked about doing it, and that first year I was just riding around with my mates, and at the end of the year, Stefan hadn't tried it yet. So I was like, dude, let's go to Hafjell with all these other bicycle friends that I just got to know, and you rent the bike.
Yeah.
And then Stefan can tell the rest.
Yeah, I remember like Mikkel told me that there's this sport. You can actually get a bike and just take the lift up or just shuttle up, and you can actually ride down the ski lift or the ski mountain. And I was like, this is like perfect. Why haven't we heard about this before? Because like we love skiing and we didn't know anything to do in the summer. You know, in the summer, we just hang around playing golf and whatnot. It's like not that cool. And he told me that we can actually ride a bike down the mountain. I was like, yeah, fuck, let's try that. So I joined them in Hafjell and rented a bike. And I think I took one lap and I was just stopped and like, where can I buy this? Like, I need to get one now, because like this, it was insane. I was like, why haven't I done this before? And then I went to Bikes and Boards and I bought Morewood Isuzu and a white one. And then I think that was in the end of 2011, because like there was like a sale, so I got a pretty decent price on it. And then first thing we did like in 2012 was buy tickets. I think we bought tickets for like season tickets for Hafjell to get as much riding down as possible. And like after that, I was hooked. There was no turning back. And now we really love it, and that's why we're like really downhill. I know a lot of people change to enduro and stuff like this, but we haven't. The thing is that which is good for us, that we haven't done this since we were like kids. So it's everything is fresh and everything is new and everything is so. You have like a really nice progression. Everything you learn, you get better and better. You're not like getting bored from it, and I think that's our. Like that's what we enjoy about it, and that's where we're like full on downhill, and yeah, we love it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Just listening to you talk about it makes me want to go riding.
Exactly.
So I can feel the energy. It's awesome. So when did you first decide to go and actually see a World Cup racing? Because I guess were there still races in Hafjell at that point?
Yeah. So we started as I said we. Well, at least I started riding it back in 2012. And then the first World Cup was in Hafjell in 2012. And we went there mainly just to ride, but there was like a World Cup at the same time. And we rode all day and then we watched the races afterwards. And that was our introduction to the World Cup. And we really enjoyed it, and it was really much fun. But back then we were just there for riding, not much for actual World Cup. But it was fun to have like the World Cup circuit here, and we were walking around the pits and like talking or seeing all the stars and walking around there and getting autographs and everything like this. And then it started when the Huckfest or the Festiers came to Norway, which is actually the first fest series, and that started in Huckfest in Ål in Norway, and that's where we actually started getting more into photographs and photographing and stuff like this, because we knew that a lot of these top athletes were coming to Norway for this huge event. And then at that time, we were a little bit more into these guys. And then we heard that they were all coming to Norway, and we like figured we'd need to be there. And actually, there was like not just a fest series, there was like a riding bike, you can ride a bike, there was shuttling and stuff like this. So again, we went there mainly for that, but also watching the show. So we rode bikes in the day, and then there was like shows in the night. And then we had our cameras, which I borrowed my stepmom's, ex-stepmom's camera. And Mikkel just got a new camera from his mother. And it was like just stock cameras, stock lenses. There was nothing like big deal. It was like just for taking photos, just for fun, or basically for us taking photos of ourselves biking. And we brought that and just to take photos of the pros, because we thought that would be cool. And I have always enjoyed taking photos, and I never been any pro back then, but I always thought it was fun, and it was like thrilling for me to like get better and to get borrow a camera. That would be great. So we went to, after the we biked, we went to the show, and it was like open for everyone. There was like, you can go up on the jumps. So we stood there, and these guys, like, we haven't never seen this only on video. We have seen people jumping like huge jumps. We were just been riding ourselves, and it was like, that's nothing. But we can walk into the jumps, and we can just stand on top of the jumps, and people just jumping over us, like flying over. And there was like big names like Kutsoji and Aggie and Andrea Lekaniga and guys like this. It was like just riding besides us. And then afterwards, you can go to this barn, which is close to the circuit, and you can just go there and drink beers, and you can talk to these guys. They were like, so open and so friendly. Like, you can go up to them and say, hey, what's up? And they would talk to you. And we started taking photos, and we thought that was really fun. And then there was like a lot of people around there with all these media companies. I remember it was like Blur Media, and they were like Ante Media and stuff like this. And we were like, we looked up so much to these guys, because they were like actually talking to the big riders. We were just standing in the background, just looking at them like they were like superstars, and really enjoying it. And then we took some photos, and actually we got a photo from a Norwegian legend, and he was taking a backflip on one of the biggest jumps in the line. And we actually thought that we could sell that photo to like big magazines and stuff like this. Like, we were like, now we're gonna step it up and get really big. And then on the way home, we were like, okay, how should we sell this picture? We need a name. And then we were riding home with my car, and then Mikkel said, like, yeah, this is like a really, it was like a really like mayhem weekend. Like, yeah. Because they were like mosh pits. There were like people stage diving from two stories up onto people. It was like, we haven't been to these kind of parties before, because we grew up a pretty posh place in all, just outside Oslo. And it was pretty posh. And then now we went to this like barn party, which is like crazy for us, and mosh pits and rock music, and it was like totally different. And we just partying with the heroes, and we went to the bike show, and people were crazy jumping up over us, taking backflips. Like, we have never seen anything like it. For us, this was like really mayhem. It's like, that was the best way to describe it. And then, as a kind of a joke, we started as a kind of a joke to all the other media guys, which was really like, they were like really high on themselves. Not high on themselves, but they were like, we looked up to them, and we're like, yeah, we should call ourselves something media. And then Mikkel came up with the Mayhem Media. We should call us Mayhem Media. And that's just something, a name we come up just to have something to put it on. And later that year, that was when Instagram was nothing. We figured we should, actually we used Instagram as a filter, because you could put on filter on the pictures. So we figured we should try using Instagram as a filter to just put filters on our cameras, on our pictures, just to make them look more cool. So we started posting them there, and then we got a couple of few followers, but that was nothing. And then the year after, the festival is back, and I couldn't go then because I was at something else. I was pre-booked, but I remember Mikkel went, and he got a picture.
Because that's kind of where the next level started. Because that next year, I broke my neck that spring, and that's kind of like until then we had just done it for fun, and we had like 30 followers on Instagram, and I broke my neck in a biking accident in Drammen, and just was riding when I was way too tired, and just down a rock and didn't catch myself and straight on the neck. And I was out for at least 3 months, and I was lucky. It was a pretty clean break, and after a while I couldn't remove the neck brace, and but I was still, this had just happened in the beginning of the summer vacation, so I was still not gonna ride, and I felt pretty terrible, you know. And then I decided to step up the media for the rest of the year, and because I knew I wasn't going to be riding anymore. And I had the camera I got from my mom. So I went to the next Hillbilly Huckfest in Ål. And I didn't know anyone there because Steffen, he was going somewhere else. But I was like, dude, I'm just going to go up there with my little camera and see what happens. So I go up there, and the same pros are back. But this time I'm a little bit more prepared, because during that winter, some of the pros had actually used our photos, but they never gave photo cred. And this kind of annoyed me, because it was like, ah, shit. But I understood it too, because they're like, fuck it, I'm riding, you're there taking a photo, it's still me making that photo. So it's like, you don't want to bitch too much about photo cred, but back then it was like, oh man, it would be sweet if they gave me a photo cred. So I went back up there again the next year, and had the camera and my broken neck, with one mission to get these guys to do some sick shit so I could take a photo of it and then get the photo cred when they repost it. That was kind of my mission. And I knew we had some thing in common with me and all the pro riders, because we already talked to them the year before. So like I said, I came more prepared. I was just running around, just shooting, just looking in the camera, shooting. Back then I didn't know anything, zero. The only thing I knew is that I had to look through the hole and push the button, because that was all I knew. Because Stefan was a little bit better than me, but he never really taught me much about it. But because I didn't know you had to do all this crazy shit and all the manual settings, so I was literally just looking into the hole and just pushing. I didn't know there was focus points there. So many shots are out of focus, but the lens wasn't a super long one, so it still looked a little bit blurry, and everything was on auto, and then I put it on Instagram, and when you shoot auto on a cheap Canon camera, the pictures, after the sun goes down, the pictures can get really harsh, and then you just have to go on Instagram and find a filter and caution it out. So I was like, okay, let's do it. I just shoot around, and I meet this other shooter. And yeah, there was a wind stop, and I meet this other shooter, and he had this crazy beard. And I sit down with him, and he had this big ass camera, and I was like, holy shit, you look really pro. And I was like, dude, do you think I can borrow a lens from you? Like, because I was like realizing that when I met him, I was like realizing there was something I'm missing. So I was like, dude, are you bro enough to just borrow me a lens just for an hour? And he's like, dude, this is my only lens. And he had like a 70-200. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, man. And there was a wind stop and I didn't think more about it. I was like, just, it was like a wild, crazy shot like that would happen. And I was like, oh, fuck it. And I sit down on a rock beside of him and we started talking and there was still the wind stop and we started drinking beers because I had some. And after talking to him for like one hour, maybe they started riding again and we started shooting and I just kept on shooting with my little camera and got great results. And for me back then, not knowing anything, and I was so stoked and just straight onto the camp. And then I met a bunch of Mokken's friends and they were so good to me and just took me into their camper and shit. And just from there, it's like an adventure. But the main thing was that I knew what to do when I posted the photo because I had a little party with the pros that same night because we had like a lavo, mm-hmm. and we call it a volcano tent. And in there we had a bunch of fun, and we all agreed that after that night, if people were gonna use free shots, they would give me photo credit. And then I got some of my first like pro followers, like Kyle James. He came a year later. Yeah, that was the second year. So Kyle Jameson was there. He was really friendly, and Jeff Herb, and they were like some of the first pros that started following me, and they believed in me. And then I was like sick and like so crazy. I just kept on Ace 2 from Canada, and I was like, then I was like, holy shit, there is world. There is like a big race in Norway, big world champs later on, and that was the next year. And then I just googled for 2 months and just what lens do you have to get to be pro. And then I found this Canon 70-200 lens, and I could rent it for like 150 quid for a week. And I rented that lens and I got it in the mail. And in the fall of 2014, it was world champs and in Hafjell. And Ratboy was like having so much progression back then.
Yeah.
And then I was like, holy shit, I need to shoot this shit. And just ran up on the hill and kept shooting and still didn't know anything. And back then I was still not moving too fast because of the neck and everything, but I was so dedicated to get a good shot because I had this professional lens on this super cheap body. So I wake up after like a hard days of partying, and I knew it was training. It was the last training before finals, and I hadn't really gotten the shot that I was happy with, but I knew there was like one last spot I could shoot, and it was the road gap. And only like a few people did it in the beginning, but now more and more people did it. And then I just woke up in the cabin we were living at the top, just at 9 o'clock maybe, and was so hungover and no one else was up, and just went out, found that spot further down on the hill. And by that time, I had used so much time that there was only like 3 riders or maybe 4-5 riders coming down. And I took up my camera and I started shooting, and it was just shit, shit, shit. And they were coming down and they were jumping this road gap, and it was looking really sick, like crazy. And then I hear a rider coming, and I see it's Ratboy. And then I just remember, like, this is it. Like, please, God, let it happen. And I just push in the button, and it goes like, tick, 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 tick. And then it stops because then the memory card is overloaded. And I was like, holy shit. And he runs by me. And then I look at my camera and I'm like looking through the pictures. And it's like he can see him coming around. It's really unclear. And then he comes to the road gap and he really pulls his bike up. And he like just gives it everything he has while like whipping it out. And everything was unfocused. And then you see the next shot just hit it. And that's where he was the most stylish too. And he goes by. I go back. I was super happy. I was like screaming. And there were like other spectators like, what the fuck? And I was like running around showing them the picture. And I was so stoked because I was such a big fan of Ratboy, or still am, and this was such a big moment for me. So I ran back to the cabin, and the other boys had just gotten up and we were about to eat breakfast, and I had this other photo of Ratboy that was way more shitty that I took earlier on the day before. And it just says, banger of Ratboy will be launched tonight at 9. And then I post this photo and I just talk with the other guys. And of course I tell my friends and they're like, okay, cool. So I post this photo right before breakfast, that I will have a banger out and a picture of Ratboy. And like 2 minutes later, he started following me and I'm like eating breakfast with all my mountain bike buddies. And then, like, ticking in on Instagram, like, Ratboy Bryce started following him, and it's like, holy fuck! And it's like, Ratboy just started following me, and all the other guys, they were so, like, not happy on my part. They were like, oh, like, yeah, that's cool, man. It will happen to us soon, too, probably. Like, no one was, like, stoked. They were, like, so jealous, and I was like, fuck, yeah, and that gave me even more motivation to just go out and shoot even more. And then by the end of that weekend, we got to know the riders more because we stayed for after party and stuff. And it was a crazy, crazy weekend. And on Saturday night, I meet Marshy and just talk to him randomly drunk. And then he liked my beard so much, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And we took a photo where he's like fucking with my beard and shit, and he gave me his number because we were up to some shenanigans later, and he said he was down, and so I called him, and he's like, no, I'm not coming. And then I was like, okay, cool. And he's like, but you guys should go and visit Ratboy. And I'm like, oh yeah, that would be sick, but do you think he kind of wants us there? And he's like, yeah, he would be stoked if someone came and visited him. And I'm like, okay, where is he? And he's like, yeah, he's in the hospital in Lillehammer. And we're like, okay, cool. And I was like, what does he like? Like, we had to bring him something. And he's like, smoking titties, man. And I'm like, fuck, yeah. And I'm like, sick. And I told Stefan, like, fuck, the Ratboy, we should go and visit him. And he was like, yeah, sick. And I told all the other dudes too, because we were like at McDonald's. And they were like, everyone was going to go. And then suddenly everyone bailed because they were like, ah, I have to go home and blah, blah, blah. So it ended up just being me and Stefan. And we go into the store and we buy some a bunch of candy and some Norwegian porno mags. And then I roll up a little CDJ and put it in a DVD cover of Senna. And we go in there and we go to the hospital and we're like, we've got this massive bag of gift with porno and candy and CDJs and just into the hospital. And we're like, fuck, this is going to be insane. Like, we're like, we didn't know what to expect. And then we go into the room and Makin, who is a Norwegian free rider and a friend of ours, he was sitting there actually with him because he was visiting him. And then we gave him the gift. He loved it. And I think he passed on the movie, but it was such a good time just sitting there talking to him. And Makin was there too. So it was a really good relation between us. And it was like crazy. And while he was lying in the bed, he got his medal. And he was like, ah, fuck, because he lost that race because he overjumped the bridge. And he's like, he just looked at it and just look like close the box again and like fuck, and like after like 30 minutes he like pulled it back up and he again it's like it's kind of cool though, and it's like fuck, and we're like oh man, and like then we got to meet his dad and the whole the rest of the team who was there, and we just talked for like 1 hour with Makin and Ratboy, and we're like, this is so crazy, and we're like in love because we were like the biggest fans, and after that we decided like if we're gonna meet Ratboy again, we need to start shooting World Cups, because that was the last World Cup in Norway or World Champs. Yeah.
And then you decided to go on the road.
Yeah.
And there was no budget, right? You were just doing this out of your own pocket, doing it as cheaply as you could to get to all the World Cups.
Yeah, so after that we went the first World Cup that next year, and that was Lords. And as you said, there's no budget. We don't have any money from this. As you hear from our story, we're not pro at all. Like we started from nothing, just learning ourselves. And back then we had stock cameras, and we didn't know anything about shooting, and definitely not anything about editing. So we went there mainly just like because we knew it was fun, and then we know that it wasn't going to be any more World Cups in Norway. So we knew we had to go somewhere else, and we thought that Lords would be a great place to go because it was our first World Cup the next year. And we went there and rented a cheap hotel and brought our cameras, and just the thing is like we didn't have any accreditation or nothing because we were amateurs, and so we actually shot most of the seasons, like the first races we shot outside the tape just for our own fun. We're standing outside the tape, and in Lords to get out onto the top, you can't get up on the top without accreditation. There's no one. There's just riders and photographers that can ride the gondola. So we actually had to walk all the way up to the top and then start shooting all the way down. And that's like how we started. And quite a funny story is like we're always friendly. We're from Norway. We try to be friendly to everyone. And we knew a couple of these photographers, and we felt like we were photographers too, you know. We went there to feel like photographers. And then we walked past some of the photographers, and we look at them and say, hi, how are you doing? And they were just like, because they had this yellow or red bib on them, they just looked down into the ground and they didn't want to say hi or nothing. They were like super superficial, and they didn't want to say anything to us, and we're like, okay, that's kind of rude, but okay, but whatever. And we just kept on doing what we wanted, and I remember like we said to each other, like if we ever get pro or get paid for this, or if we ever do anything, like we're never gonna not say hi to some of the other photographers or whoever says hello, we're always going to say hi. And I remember saying to Mikko, like, if you ever see me ignoring someone or being rude or something, just let me know. Like, now you're being rude. Like, we're not going to be like that, because we felt like that was rude. But some of the photographers were really friendly to us. So, like, Sven Martin and Mad Dog Boris, they were really friendly to us, and they actually gave us some tips on how to shoot. And we, nice. As you said, we didn't know anything, and they told us actually about shooting on manual and setting the focus points different places. And they gave us a couple of tips actually. So they were really friendly, and we kept on shooting outside the tape. And I think we went to the first World Cup, and it was in Lords, and we went to the last one. I think it was in Andorra that year, like the first and the last. We figured we should go to, and how we started our career, I guess.
Yeah. And were the riders welcoming to you?
Yeah, like Ratboy was really welcoming, and we knew him a little bit from before. So we hang out a little bit with him, and then of course, like walking around with him, then the other people stopped and said hello, and then they said hello to us. And I think most of the riders were really friendly to us. And I remember we had a couple of interviews and stuff like this, and people were really friendly. Like the riders were friendly, like really friendly. So, and that's like one of the part of us, like what we like about this sport as well. As Mikkel said, back in when we were in Havfjell and partying, we went up, we could go to the after party and we can go up to the riders, and they were super friendly. Like I remember one of our biggest heroes was Steve Smith, and we went to the after party. That was back in 2013, I guess. And you can go up to him and have a chat with him. It's like super friendly. And always on the after parties, people are always super friendly. So the riders have always been friendly to us.
That's good to hear. Yeah. So how has it grown then from that first year? Because since then you've been to a lot more of the World Cups. Your Instagram following has gone crazy. I think you got like 105,000 followers or something.
Yeah. It's like Stefan said, when we went to Lodres, because of we wanted to hang out with Ratboy Bryce and his friends again, we didn't know much, and we just gave it a shot. And the next year there was Lodres again, but this time Stefan couldn't come, and I decided to go by myself. And By that year, we had actually upgraded. I learned a ton of skills, and Stefan, he was already better than me to shoot. So he learned from a different perspective. He had way more knowledge, so he took it way faster, and he could show me all this shit. And that's kind of my biggest motivation today, is that Stefan is still better to shoot than me, and I can always ask him for help if I'm fucking up, and it's such a good thing to have. But before we went to Lodres, we didn't have a computer. Like we thought people were stupid for shooting in RAW because the files were so big. Like, and then you couldn't watch it on your iPhone later. It was so stupid. So I was like, idiots, let's just shoot JPEG, and we'll just fix the photos in Instagram. It works like a dream, I thought. But then you start to know more, and you get a better gear. So we got like this Canon 7D Mark II, and we bought a new one, and that was like a super quick camera compared to what we have been shooting at, which was like super, super slow. And if you shot RAW with those, they would only last like two pictures before they had to stop for 5 seconds. And then we started shooting RAW in 2016, and we got a new MacBook. And I went to Lodres alone, and I felt like more prepared. That was the first time I actually had a bib. A really good friend of ours in Spain explained to me what I had to do to get a bib. And it's not very easy to get a bib, but if you can be reporting for a newspaper or an agency, you are most likely going to get one. So I talked to Brage Vestrevis, Brage's newspaper, his local one. And they agreed to give us a paper saying that they would go good for us and give them a bib. And in return, we would give them all the photos of Brage the whole year, because he had just turned junior. And we obviously know Brage a lot because he lives close to us, and we've been shooting with him for so long. And it was maybe the worst deal a photographer could ever like agree to. Like, it would just fuck up all the other photographers. But we didn't know, like, we didn't know anything. We didn't know a price or a picture. We didn't know anything. Like, no one would tell you either. So we were like, everything is good as long as you get by, you know. And And we go to Lodres. We shoot. I get the photos of Brage, and we get to keep the media bib. And that weekend, I also had to give a shout out to a few guys like Party John and Sam Reynolds and Deaconator. I met those guys. I was all alone, and I met those guys on the hill, and we were like partying the whole weekend. And I had like the Mayhem Media business card, and every time we went or I went to the bar, there was like 10 more beer, and we're like 10 more beer, and Sam Reynolds and Deaconator and Party John, which is now Papa John, they were like drinking like fuck with me. And there they had like, they had this shit you put in the beer and it tastes like a soda, and we were like going at it. So when I was going back after like getting 20 beers, I was going to get 30 more. And the lady in the bar in Lodres, she gave me 10 more beer for free. And I was like, holy shit. And that's the only time I've been given 10 beers for free. And that shout out to Lodres about that. So that's a really good race to go to. I think it's back on the calendar right around the corner. And it's the crazy town, but I was partying with these guys, and they were super sick, and Ratboy was there, and it was super sick, and everything was all good, and we had a great time. And I was still posting to Instagram, but at least the photos had a bit of better quality. And I was going to take the airplane home, and I had to eat lunch, and I go to a restaurant, and Sven Martin was there together with Steel Shitty Media. And then I sit down with those guys, and Sven Martin buys me this huge breakfast plate. And we're talking, and I was so stoked that he would sit there and talk to me while I was waiting to go to the airport. And he was doing the same, because it was the Monday after race. And he was like, yeah, I think the best thing for you guys is to like keep following your dream, and maybe like try sell merch, because it's really hard to get into this industry. And if you, because we're like kind of like, we give away all the shit for free, and all the photographers doesn't like it. But St. Martin doesn't mind. He knows that we do it our way, but he was like, maybe you should start selling some hats like you're wearing, or t-shirts, and maybe you can make money out of that and go to World Cups. And I thought that was a great idea. So he really lighted a fire in me, and we had some great years after that, selling t-shirts and stuff. And now it's kind of like, after a while you need to get paid for your stuff. Mm. You can't and photo credits and stuff. So we're like, everyone that buys t-shirts from us, like they are like our main. They give us work, because they make sure we can afford to have to pay down some of the airplane tickets. And we don't have any clients, so it's super hard to get around. And I was really living by St. Martin's words about selling merch and not get into the industry. And it kind of worked for a little bit, but we became also more known. We got like better production and shit. And people kind of knew we were not pro, or kind of like nobody in the business. So a lot of smaller companies, they really took advantage, because we were like these two idiots on a holiday drinking beers and taking photos. So suddenly, after we got a little bit more known, smaller companies within the bike company or different bike companies in the industry, they wanted to have some photos. And we were like, yeah, sick. And we're like, let's just do it, and we'll send him over, and we'll send him a bill for $100. And we got burned like so much in the beginning by different players in the business. Like, we gave away our stuff. They didn't want to pay. They like they didn't answer the email you messaged them. You see, I've seen the message on Facebook or Instagram. They don't reply. Like, it's like for 100 quid, like 200 quid, like. So we're like, fuck, and we're like getting so tired of it. So we just said, like, after this, no shots for free, because people, like, they knew they could ask us for free shit and we would give it to them. And even if we didn't want anything in return, they just had a really bad attitude. So then we built up, and then in 2017, we were so big, and we were compared to where we other people, like, we were like right behind St. Martin on following count, and people probably thought that we were professionals, like that we were pro. But for me, a pro is a guy who lives off his work, and we didn't do that at all. We had different jobs, and all the shit we did, we took like all we, or like we still do, like we take like 5 weeks off work and spend probably like 10 to 20K a year just doing this shit. So like our sheets are so red. And that kind of led us to that other in the business. Like after we told everyone to fuck off, after they tried to get free shit, then people started to think that we were pro. And Stephanie, you can tell the rest in 2017 how we kind of got into the pro pro life.
Yeah, so we tried 1 year being pro. That was not the best idea, actually. But yeah, because we got contacted by Mandraker, MS Mandraker, in 2017. They wanted someone to film their series for them, and of course we wanted to try and be pro, and we wanted some job. So we said, of course, we said yes, but as Mikkel said, we don't know anything about the industry. We don't know any prices. We don't know nothing, you know. So we asked around some friends who works in the industry, like Norwegian friends, and like, what should we take, and how much does it cost to have a videographer for a weekend, for a season, whatever. And we try to ask around a little bit, and then I said, like, we don't want to ask too much money because we're not pro. So I figured if we say a low price, then people, well, Mandraker would think that, okay, we're not paying much, then we won't get much, you know. So so we asked like a really low price, and afterwards we heard that, like, we were more than half of what a usual price is. And then we knew nothing, and we actually got, because we had to buy a new film camera, because we didn't have a film camera, we only had photos. So we actually bought a film camera from the States, from the UK. A friend of ours brought it to Lourdes. That was the first World Cup race was in Lourdes again, and he actually brought it. So the day before we're gonna actually start shooting the World Cup, I got it in my hands. I never tried it before. I didn't know anything. And it's like, the other guy, he showed me how to set it up and start filming and everything. And we just started at the top. And at that time we had actually bib. So we took the gondola up and started shooting, and just started from work from there. And back then we knew nothing about any editing. So we actually rented in another guy, another Norwegian guy we met earlier at a race. We rented him in to do our editing. So we actually sent everything to him, and he was good at editing, but he probably didn't know or knew the same as us in downhill. So he did a good job, but like it probably wasn't what they looked for. So we sent that in, and we tried to ask them, like, what do you want now? Just film it and we will figure out later. And we did that. And we sent it in, and they were like, yeah, this is pretty good, but we want more like this or this. So we kept on like doing what we wanted and kept on shooting and filming. And after a while, the quality went down, and we did the same again, and they wanted us to involve, and we didn't. And then we we sent them one edit and they weren't happy with that at all. And unfortunately, our editor, he was a bit young, so he had like exams at the time. So he couldn't help us with editing after he finally gave us the first edit. So Mondraker, they were pissed at us. They were like shouting at us on emails and said that they wanted to fire us. And of course, no problem with them, because I know they have people above them who shout at them. So I know that. But and we didn't deliver as probably we should. But as I said, we weren't pros, and we tried to lower our price to compensate for that. But then at that time, we were like, as Mikkel said, this is our vacation. We have different jobs. We don't have any budget. So this is just our vacation. And like, we always grew up and we like to party, you know, and we still partied when we do these things. And we were always the last people up on the hill. And yeah, we probably weren't that serious seeing it hindsight. So yeah. And then, and in the end, they weren't that happy, and we wanted to deliver, of course, but we didn't have the resources or the knowledge. And then we were like, okay, probably it's best to just fire us, because we don't know what to do. So like, it's better for us, and we can just do our own thing and party and chill. But they couldn't get in a new filmer for them, so they had to have us. So, and we didn't want to buy any tickets before we knew that we actually had a job. So we waited like until like right before the actual new World Cup. So the prices on the plane tickets went up high. So we spent all our money on plane tickets, because we didn't think that we would get a job, still have a job. So we spent a lot of money on new tickets. So we didn't have any more money for hotels. So we figured like, fuck it, we buy a tent. So we can live in a tent, that's free. We can live whatever we wanted. So we bought a tent. So we live in a tent. So that was that money saved. And as well, on top of this, we overslept for a flight to Lenzerheide. And these plane tickets, they are super expensive. It's the most expensive country up in Norway, which is like, there's 1,000... pound flights two ways. So we overslept, so we woke up and our plane leaves in 10 minutes. We live like half an hour away from the airport, and we're like screaming, "Oh, what should we do? We have to be there, because then at least we get fired." And then we buy new airplane tickets one way for another 1,000 pounds just to get down there. Yeah, it was crazy. And then, of course, we had to live in a tent. And it's illegal to tent there. So we had to like find the legal spot. So we had to move all around the area because every time we woke up, people came up to us and said, "You can't sleep here." So we have to move around. And yeah, that's actually the story about why we live in a tent. We still live in a tent. We started with a small tent, which is quite funny, because we both slept in a small It's two people tent, but you have to be lovers to like sleep in that tent because it's so small. And we were in Canada, in Mount St. Anne, and we camped there, and these huge truck come in with like they're like the bigger than my apartment, and they park where we live, and we slept in a small tent. And then in the morning, people were like making breakfast and everything, and then one of us comes out of the tent. And they're like, "Okay, yeah, there's a guy sleeping in there." And then another guy comes out of the tent. Is like, "Okay, two people sleeps in there. That sounds a little bit okay. Yeah, but okay, that's have to be like this." So it's pretty funny. But now we had to upgrade. We bought a little bit bigger tent, but that actually blew. It was last time we were in Mount St. Anne. It was a shit storm, and it actually blew over, and it broke. So we had to sleep on the ground. So we actually last time we were in Canada, we actually slept on the ground in our sleeping bags, no tent, nothing, just straight on the ground, just beside our rented car, and slept there. And this girl who actually rents out the site, she went out and showed people where they could stay, And the guys next to us, we actually got to be friends with them. They told us that this girl, she said, she walked around and showed them their places. Like, you can stay here, but these guys, they sleep on the ground. They're crazy. They just sleep on the ground. But you can stay here if you want to. Like, it's okay. So, yeah. So now we have to buy a new tent, I guess. But that's how low our budget is. Like, there's nothing there. So, it might sound like being pros can be a good thing, but it's not that glamorous as it hears sounds like. Yeah.
So what is next for Mayhem Media then? What do you guys plan to do in the 2020 season?
Well, we like you know, we've been on Instagram for since 2014, really, now, so 6 years, and we love it there, and it's super cool to connect with people and follow new friends and get a view on things. But we really want to push video, and we have been thinking about it for a long time, and like you get kind of motivated by Ben Cutrow, who kind of went from zero to hero by doing his thing, and people would like pay, like 100 people would pay his trip to go somewhere and the report, and it's like that's pretty sick. And when we started Instagram there, and still today, it was unheard of for me that like people would actually pay to get you around, and I guess that's what an influencer is too, kind of today. But I don't necessarily want that to happen. I kind of want to sell my own shit and make the trips being paid for that way. But YouTube is definitely the next big challenge. And when we do video, or we feel like children, like we're like, when with the photo, you look into the hole and you push the button and it's sick and all that, and you get the shot and you get the rush and it's sick. But in video, you don't get the rush, you don't get anything until you finalize your production, and it's super rewarding afterwards, like way more rewarding than 10 sick photos, I think. And you just have to really give of yourself and do get out of your comfort zone and still deliver some good content. And I think this is the right time to do it now. I think we will still do photos and all that, but like we will do like 70 video and 30 photo, like, and just try and kill it. And hopefully some of the other riders at the World Cups and Fest Series will help us out a bit, and we can do some sick bike checks and interviews. And we got a bunch of other new stuff coming up for this year. It's some new concepts we want to try. I just got my own computer for the first time in like 10 years. I've been borrowing Stefan's computer all the time, and now I have my own, and I'm super keen to put it to work. And just YouTube and of course Instagram, but hopefully people who follow us on Instagram will give us a follow on YouTube too and see what's up.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm looking forward to seeing some more video content from you guys. That'd be awesome.
I think there is a bunch from the races and stuff, but everyone says like, let's go behind the races and a little bit what happens in the background, and that's a good idea. And one of our ideas is, which we will start with at first, is to make a traveler's guide to the World Cups, but in video format. And we will share all our knowledge with the race venue, where you should fly into, what rental car company, where you should sleep if you live in a hotel, if you live in a tent, where you can sleep then, legally or illegally. And just bring the World Cup out there to the people, because there is people need to go to World Cups if we're going to keep killing it. And the riders will keep pushing, but without the fans, you know, it's like they say, it's no sport. So let's get more people out there, and it's super easy to find a good place to chill, and it doesn't have to be more expensive than going to Amsterdam for 2 days, you know. So that's, we want to give back to all the fans who have been following us, because we always wanted to take them on a journey, but through Instagram, and make them feel that they are kind of at the races. And that's why we post more than one photo a day too when we're at the races. We don't want to sit back in with 100 photos, because what are we going to do with them? But compared to the pros, they get paid to do this, so they don't, they only share what they've been paid for. But when we post photos of riders, it's because of we dig, either dig the rider or dig the shot. So it's kind of different. It's more like from the heart.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And so you guys have visited a lot of venues over the years. What's been your favorite race venue, and why?
You can take that one first, Stefan. I'll think about that for a
little. Yeah, that's a good question. Depends. Like some places are really good for partying. And,
yeah, I was going to ask where the best after party is.
Yeah, well, Mikkel can tell you about that, because he likes the party, so we all do. But
if you do the three best tracks, I'll do the three best party places.
Yeah, we really enjoy Andorra. This is, it's a really cool track. It's, it got a lot of stuff in it, and that's really cool. And people seem to feel like it's really rough and everything. So we really enjoy that. And it's, of course, it's warm. It's close to Barcelona. We have a couple of friends living in Barcelona. So we've been there a lot, and it's easy to get there, and it's fairly cheap, though calling there is really expensive. But yeah, it's a good place, and I think we enjoyed really Lochin, which is back this year, I guess, which is also really cheap and a good place to hang out, and it's warm and everything as well. And I think France, in special, like the crowd there is absolutely amazing. Lourdes before and now with the Léger, the crowd goes insane. And now with this Loic and Amaury, which is like killing it in the race, people are even more crazy now. And I think that really... really extends the sport, and I think that's a good place to be for the crowd. And yeah, this season we were lucky to actually witness this battle between these two legends and mammoths that actually fight it out all the way to the finish. That was a pretty intense World Cup. So. Yeah, I think those might be just on the top of my head now. And of course, we love, we've only been there once, I guess, I think, but Leogang as well. This is a good party. But on top of my head, I think those are the courses I enjoy best, and the people around it and the atmosphere around it. I think those are the ones I enjoy. And yeah, the next question, as you said, is which is the best party?
Yeah, go on, Mikkel.
Yeah, for, it's super hard though, because there is some really good places to party, and I think the people who need to step it up with the partying knows it, because the sickest thing with a race is to meet like the legends, and there are only a few places where that can happen, because there is not that often people go out to meet you. And for me, the best places would be Mont Saint-Anne, and because that is a great place. I love it there, and there is a huge party there every night. And also Commensal Spot, for sure, in Andorra. And I don't know, on the last, Léger is sick as fuck. Yeah, Léger, for sure.
And Leogang is pretty good as well.
Yeah, Leogang, I wish I could bump Leogang up there too, but Lecce was so crazy now. That's true. I was going to say Leogang, but Lecce and Leogang, both crazy places. But you will figure, or we will show you more in our travel guide to the World Cups, so stay tuned, and I'll tell
Excellent.
You more.
Sounds good. And it's not all highs at the World Cups. You, I think, Mikko, you were on the scene at Mont Saint-Anne this year when Brooke had his accident and broke his back. I know you wanted to talk briefly about your experience of that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have been following what's been going on in the, and I really feel for Brooke. It was terrible to witness what he had to go through. I started shooting, and in the beginning, when I started shooting at the top, I got to know that Brooke McDonald was hurt further down, like almost at the bottom. And I was like, oh, fuck, like that sucks. And some people said it was his pelvis. So I wasn't too worried. I just go down, not struggling too much to get down because I knew there was no way I would get down before he would be gone anyway. So, but I was like really curious of how he was doing. So I just keep shooting, keep going down, just maybe an hour goes by. And I talk to the next marshal I meet and I ask, is Brooke still down there? And they're like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, holy shit. And like, what's the news? And they were like super serious, like something was really wrong. They couldn't tell me. So I was like, holy fuck. And I was like, damn, but he needs to be gone here. Like, he needs to get out of here really soon. I was just thinking to myself, there's no way in hell I will meet him. And so I continue shooting down. And I just keep on asking the marshals, like, after maybe, like, every 20 minutes or something. And they're like, yeah, no, he's still there. After, like, almost, like, 2 hours, we get maybe a bit, yeah, more around 2 hours, I would guess. I get further down, like I knew he was really close. So I was like, fuck it. If he's still here, I'm just going to run down and see what's going on, because I was like, this is so fucked up, you know? So I go down there and I see a bunch of people around him, and I get down there and Petey is feeding him water, and I'm like, holy shit. So I didn't want to intrude too much, but Brooke McDonald sees me because I kind of come walking, and he's like, man, what the fuck are you doing here? And he started laughing, and then he had to quit because he was in so much pain. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And like, he was like all wrapped in this like special lining to keep him warm, like NASA shit. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I until then, I was like, I thought it was the pelvis because someone said it might be. So I was like, and they were like, he was like, give me more painkillers. And he was like running out of painkilling, and like they gave him more and more and more, and he didn't feel anything. And like, I was like, dude, this is so crazy. I couldn't believe it. And I just didn't want to leave him because it was only like Peter there, and there were some other dudes around there, but they were not like really that involved. But my Pete is like my uncle, and Brooke is like a homie. So I just wanted to hang out and see that he would get out of there safe. And then I didn't know that much when I came down, but obviously I knew they were waiting for a shopper. And Brooke McDonald was like, where's the shopper? And they're like, 20 minutes. And we were like, oh, okay, sick. Like, yeah, I was like, okay, good, 20 minutes. And 20 minutes goes by, and he's like, where's the shopper? And he's like, it will be more like half an hour. And he's like, what? Are you serious? You said 20 minutes, half an hour ago? Kind of, and like, it just kept going like that. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, I was kind of like shocked, but I was like, come on, the shopper needs to get her. And then it didn't show up, and we were just hanging around, and the practice was pretty much over. Like, he'd been lying there. He was crashed in the beginning of the practice. He lied there the whole practice. Nothing was going on. And we heard like a four-wheeler, like, and it sounded like a chopper, and they were like, "Ah, oh, the chopper is here," and we're like, "Yeah, sick," and like, "Perfect," and there was a four-wheeler, and they keep calling back, "There is no chopper coming." Apparently, they didn't, like Brooke said in a different podcast, they didn't think it was life-threatening, so they didn't send the main chopper; they sent like the backup chopper for not non-life-threatening situations. And I just, like, I didn't know what to think. And then the lady, the doctor, she was like, or Brooke was like, hey, check if I can move my feet. And the doctor was like, hey, and she takes away the shit he had around him and to look at his feet. And then he moves, he's like, oh, she was like, move your left feet. And he moves it like maybe like 2 centimeters. And she's like, yeah, you're moving it. And then she was like, okay, move your right feet. And he was like, I'm doing it. And the foot was like completely still. And he was like, is it moving? And she was like, yeah, it's moving a little bit. And then I was like, holy fuck. When I saw that, I just had to turn around and like walk away a little bit because I didn't want him to see the face. I know I made the... Like I was like, then I was like, holy shit, this is real. So we wait even longer and we clean the spot for a chopper to land for rocks. And finally the chopper come after like 4 hours. And then the guy couldn't land. And Brooke McDonald was so relieved the chopper was there and he would finally get in. And the chopper guy, he couldn't land it. He circled for like 1 hour. Like from, he tried to land maybe 10 times before he even made an attempt. He was circling for 30 minutes and then he was like trying different shit. It didn't work. We were just standing there. Just, he was going nowhere. And actually after a while, because we weren't allowed to be around close to the chopper. And after a while, we were like, fuck, this is taking so long. Like seriously, like, and we weren't allowed to be there. So we're like, fuck, we just need to go down because we've been on the hill all day. And so had he. And I just felt so bad for him. And I didn't know what to think because I didn't know anything what was going on. But I just remember Brendog asked me how he was doing. And I told him what I saw and with the legs. And I was like, and Brenda was like, fuck. And it was so, such a bad atmosphere, or not bad atmosphere, but a weird one. And when the race was over, we wanted to visit Bulldog, and because he'd been so good to us through the years. And we go and visit him, and it was kind of heartbreaking to see him in the bed lying there. And I think he was... Yeah, it was really quick and it was really good to see him because I was about to start crying because it was so emotional, but you don't reflect over that shit in the middle of it. You get it afterwards, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And so good to see him this week back on a bike, jumping.
So, like... so sick to see you back, Bulldog. It's so good. It's like me losing 20... pounds is like no problem after I've been watching his videos with motivation. Like he motivates me to fucking get out there and kill it. Like, well, if he can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, man, definitely. So someone you're looking forward to having a beer with on the World Cup circuit this year then?
For sure. When we see him in Loshin, I hope he will jump from the ferry with me from the highest level.
Yeah, tell us about that. What went on?
Oh yeah, the ferry jump. We were going back from the World Cup, and luckily Stefan was driving, so I could drink. And I like to drink when I'm hungover. and I was chilling, and we were taking some beers, and they were selling beers on the boat, and the Mondraker guys were, and a bunch of other riders, they were also getting the boat from the island back to the mainland, and we're about to dock, and Laurie Greenlund was like, I'm considering jumping this. And I'm like, and coming from Norway, we jump in the sea all the time. I'm like, dude, easy. If you go, I go. And then he was like, I don't know. And then I'm like, if I jump now, I will send it more than you. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, you tell it to me. And he was like, you will send it more than me or something like that. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And like, I'm jumping. And then and I was like so motivated by that. And I just jump in the sea. It was maybe like 8 meter. For me, it was nothing. But these other guys, they were like, oh man, it's so high. And they were like, how are you okay? And I'm like, dude, haven't you guys been swimming when you were kids? Like, we do this all the time when we were kids, like jumping from the cliffs. And they were like, holy shit, you jumped from the boat. And I'm like, so I was like, but I was like, next year, I hope Bulog will jump after me from the highest level, because this was like downstairs level. So yeah, next year in Lushin, I will definitely go from the top.
Excellent. That's the challenge set then.
Yeah, it's actually this year when I think about it.
Cool, man. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got normally 4 questions that we ask everyone, but there's 2 of you, so we'll just pick 2 of them and ask you both the same question. So Stefan, we'll start with you. If you could wind the clock back and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
Yeah, first of all, I will tell him not to party that much, because that was back when, right before high school, we were just like partying all the time. It was the most fun. And I would tell him, don't party, start riding a bike, because I would so much more enjoy like being better at riding bikes now than I do now, because it's fun. But if I started when I was younger, that would be so much more rewarding, and that would be probably better now. And that was actually when we stopped riding skis, because either you stopped at 16 or you went pro, more or less, like you had to be pro or nothing. So then there was nothing for us to do than to drink. And then if I had bikes, I probably would be better at that instead, I guess. So I would tell myself that, start riding a bike and stop drinking as much.
Fair enough. What about you, Mikael?
I would tell myself, since we have been keeping it real, and although a bunch of other people say that too, and I would tell myself, don't waste 50,000 quid on building my media up to 105,000 followers. just buy followers from the beginning, and then then when you're big enough, obviously you have to make some content. When you're around 10,000 or something, when you buy like 8,000 and then you like get it up to 10, then you start applying to get free bikes and sponsorships, and you just go from there, because that would have saved me for 50,000 quid. But although it wouldn't be so real though, but I could be a mountain bike influencer traveling around the globe now if I did like a lot of the other, or not a lot of the others, but the other people who cheat in social media, boo on you. Like, they get free hotels. We have to sleep in a tent. We know who you are. We got tools to see you. And maybe on our YouTube channel, we should tell what we found out in our investigation. But I would go back and just tell myself, fake it till you make it, and then just live the dream. But right. don't try to follow your dream, because the dream is fucked up. You know, to follow my dream, that's bullshit. So that's what I would say to myself.
Right,
no hate to people who buy followers, so good luck in the future.
All right, question 2 then. If you could have a coaching session with anyone, what rider would it be, and what would you want to learn from them? Stefan, we'll start with you.
Oof, that's a good one. I don't know. Like Petey, he's the biggest legend in my eyes, and we know him a little bit. And as Mikkel said, he's kind of like our uncle. So, and he's been here from when downhill started. He's been here, and he's been one of the greatest. And he's also one of the friendliest guys on the coast circuit. You can always go into the Santa Cruz pit, and he's always friendly. He gives us a beer, and he has his chat, and there's no complaining. He's always smiling, always friendly. So just hanging out with him, riding with him one day, that would be the greatest. And if he also gave us or gave me some tips on how to be a better rider, that would be even better. So yeah, I think Petey is he's a guy I would really enjoy having coach me on my shitty bike skills. Yeah.
Nice one. What about you, Mikael?
Ah, man, that's super hard one. If I could go back in time, it would be Stevie Smith. But if you have to pick one who lives now, it's going to be Josh Brislin, because he's like my biggest idol. And he didn't, like, if I could get to learn like 0.1% of his skills in one day with him, that would make me super stoked. And I would also be able to hang out with him the whole day, which would be even more sick than actually learning anything. So yeah, I would definitely choose Brad Boy, because he's the fucking man.
Nice. Yeah, some good choices there. Good stuff. Well, we're getting pretty much out of time. Yep. But it's been really interesting chatting, finding out more about you guys, and yeah, the energy that you have for the sport is infectious. And if the sun was out, I'd definitely be going out riding now. But if people want to keep in touch and follow what you're up to throughout the season, where's the best place for them to look?
We're having our Instagram, of course, which is at Mayhem Media with one M. And we're gonna start like building our YouTube channel a lot. So that's just search on Mayhem Media on YouTube. And if you guys want us to keep doing what we do and keep growing, we're selling merch, and just like you, we need people to buy our stuff to keep growing, and that's what makes us actually have money to go to these events. So yeah, just go to shop.mayhemmedia.com. That would be a good place to start. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, we'll put links to all of those, to the Instagram, the YouTube, and the store in the show notes, so people can go and find that. Nice one. All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time, guys.
Yeah, thank you, man. It's
been super interesting. And have a great 2020.
Yeah man. And I'll see you out there for another beer in Le Chien.
Definitely, man. Yeah, well up for that. Yeah, we'll see you there.
See you, bro.
All right. That's it for this episode with Mikael and Stefan. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Massive thank you to all of our listeners who supported this episode of the podcast with their Share the Love donations. Please keep them coming in and help me keep this thing going. You've only got a couple of days to get your hands on the Strength Factory's complete MTB program with 50% off your first month or an annual subscription for £300. It's the same program that I've been using for a few months now, and I'm definitely feeling the benefits. Just head to thestrengthfactory.uk and click on programs, or follow the link in the show notes over on downtimepodcast.com. Use the code DOWNTIME, all in lowercase, at the checkout. Don't forget also, if you're UK based, you need some suspension looking at, then sprungsuspension.com are well worth checking out. If you've got a couple of minutes, leave us a review wherever it is that you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media, where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then share the love at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Keep on spreading the word. Keep on telling your friends about the show. Share our episodes on your social media. And we'll be back with another awesome episode real soon. Until then, get out and ride.